Now the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Former Senator Jesse Helms died on Friday in his home state of North Carolina. He was 86. Now, to his dying day, he was a man who energized the right and he infuriated the left. His hardline opposition to abortion funding, funding for AIDS research, the United Nations, affirmative action, and communism made him a hero to conservatives, but a caricature to liberals. His critics called him out of tune with the times, even a bigot and a racist. In 1990, Senator Helms ran for re-election against Harvey Gantt, the African-American mayor of Charlotte. Gantt, it seemed, had a shot. He was up in the polls. But that changed late in the campaign when Senator Helms ran this commercial.
You needed that job, and you were the best qualified. But they had to give it to a minority because of a racial quota. Is that really fair? Harvey Gantt says it is.
Now, Senator Helms stood by that ad, but was it racist? No, he said.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. What am I supposed to do? Ignore everything that involves a black man? That would make me speechless in this campaign. And Mr. Gantt knows how to dish it out, but he can't take it.
On the opinion page today, Wall Street Journal columnist John Fund joins us to remember Senator Jesse Helms, a man he calls the exemplar of modern conservatism. Now, we'd like to hear from you as well, especially listeners in North Carolina. Did you vote for Senator Helms? How will you remember him? As a hero or as a villain? Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can comment at our blog. That's npr.org/blogofthenation. John Fund is a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. You can find his link, a link to his page, his piece, rather, How Jesse Helms Made a Difference, on our blog. And John Fund joins us by the phone from Aspen, Colorado. Thanks for your time today, sir.
Thanks, Mr. Ross. Just two quick corrections. My piece didn't run today. It ran Saturday.
Oh, thank you so much for the correction.
I didn't say that he was the exemplar of conservatism. I said Ronald Reagan represented the sunny and optimistic face, the uncompromisingly defiant and angry face. The exemplar was Jesse Helms.
Well, thanks for the clarification, and a fair one at that. Can you assess Jesse Helms' legacy, John Fund, you know, his achievements, without factoring in some of his more controversial views, particularly on the issue of civil rights?
Well, I factor in both his views on civil rights and gays, and I basically conclude they were myopic and blinkered. And his record is mixed. But your audience, in reading the obituaries, may not have picked up other parts of Jesse Helms for a fuller context. Who was the first senator to bring Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Soviet dissident, to America over the objections of the State Department? Who was the only senator to raise objections about Robert Mugabe's slaughter of 40,000 people with a North Korean-trained secret police brigade in 1984, which was 24 years ago, which was a sign to come of what Mugabe might be capable of? Who was the first senator to basically proclaim that Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary should join NATO? If you go through his career, there are all kinds of examples where Jesse Helms was ahead of his time. Who was the first senator to say the United Nations was corrupt and needed a full audit? This was years before the oil for food scandal. So there's a lot of parts of Jesse Helms' career that I think are to his credit, as well as the parts that I think are to on the negative side.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, despite some of the more sort of controversial positions he took, even some of them that you've just mentioned, Jesse Helms really was a hero to many conservatives, somebody who in a sense re-energized the party. And you write about how in 1976 he really relaunched Ronald Reagan's career.
In 1976, Reagan had lost five straight primaries to President Ford. He came to North Carolina's primary broke and under pressure to withdraw. Helms turned out his volunteer army for Reagan and raised money to put Reagan's 30-minute speech, which was an updated version of his famous speech for Goldwater, on North Carolina television, and it scored an upset victory for Reagan. He went on to the convention. It kept his candidacy alive and made him the front runner for the 1980 nomination when he did run again and become president.
Mm-hmm. John Fund, let's go to the phone lines. We've got Tony on the air with us from Columbia, South Carolina. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to talk to you.
Go ahead.
I can't be an apologist for Jesse Helms. I'm sorry. I grew up with the man, and his entire basis for his political career was out and out racism and bigotry. He was a follow up to George Wallace. I think he hurt the Republican Party and hurt American politics in general. And I'm sorry for his family, but I'm not sorry to see him go.
And John Fund, you wrote in your column that Senator Helms had a blind spot on racial issues. Is that a delicate way of saying he was a racist?
Well, let's be very careful here. A person's public stance and their private thoughts, I think, need to be weighed carefully. Sam Ervin, who was Helms' colleague in the Senate, was a Democrat and was the chief legal strategist for segregation. He basically drafted the Southern Manifesto arguing against Brown v. Board of Education on school integration. And Ervin, though, had a very varied career. He did a lot of things in his career about constitutional rights, privacy. He led the hearings in Watergate that brought Richard Nixon down. When he died, his career was put in full context. I'm simply arguing that Helms did have blind spots, but his career should not be viewed simply through the prism of one issue, where I think, privately, I think Jesse Helms has a case to make that he was not a bigot. And let me tell you why. He hired the first black radio announcer in North Carolina at his station. He had a completely integrated television station that he ran. He hired many blacks on his staff. He often, in his early career in the 50s and 60s, made insensitive comments. But so, too, did Senator Robert Byrd, who was a legal of the Ku Klux Klan, who sits in the Senate today, who voted against Thurman Marshall for the Supreme Court, the first black to be appointed to that position, and who just a few years ago used the N-word in a national television interview.
Tony, is that a fair point? Tony, you still with us? No, Tony's gone.
I'm simply saying, given the record of people like Ervin and Senator William Fulbright, who Bill Clinton worked for many months, who also strongly opposed the Civil Rights Act, Senator Al Gore Sr., Al Gore's father, who opposed the Civil Rights Act vociferously, many people from the South in those days have a checkered record. And I think Helms, over time, understood that that record was checkered. He didn't retreat from his positions, but I think he learned nuance, and I also think that he tried to make amends when he hooked up with Bono, the rock star, to provide increased AIDS funding for Africa and also to provide more foreign aid to Africa channeled through private sources rather than through corrupt government.
Let's talk about that in a moment, John Fund, but I want to ask you about this issue of rights for gay and lesbians. Here's Senator Helms in 1990. He gave a speech to his supporters kicking off his reelection campaign. Let's take a listen.
Seldom a day passes that there's not another lawmaker coming up with some new idea which would further destroy parental authority in our land. Just think about it. Homosexuals, lesbians, disgusting people marching in our streets demanding all sorts of things, including the right to marry each other and the right to adopt children. How do you like them apples?
John Fund, what do you make of comments like that?
Well, I'm from San Francisco. I think the reference to disgusting people is, of course, mean-spirited and bigoted. However, just remember, the public policy position that Senator Helms was endorsing, opposing same-sex marriage, was endorsed by 61% of Californians in a 2000 referendum or 1998 referendum, and today the polls show it might still lose by over 50% of the vote. So I think that, again, let's take this into context. If you go talk to Bono, and in fact I encourage you to interview him, he would say that Senator Helms mellowed in his later years, and the fact that he helped channel hundreds of millions of dollars of funding to fight AIDS in Africa is at least a partial positive part in his ledger, and you should perhaps note that as well as noting that speech.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a caller. We've got Dennis on the line from Rochester, New York. Dennis, welcome.
Hi. I wasn't a fan of Jesse Helms' politics, but the thing that I will give him is that he was an authentic politician. You always knew where he stood. He didn't say one thing and then did another. He was consistent. There was no ambiguity. There was no ambivalence about, you know, what he was going to think or say and how he was going to practice his politics. And I think that in this day and age, and perhaps, you know, even in the past, is worth something. I didn't agree with him, you know, on most of his issues, but you always knew where he stood.
John Fund, a principled politician?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. He was principled.
One of the things that Helms brought to politics was you knew exactly how he was going to stand. He wasn't going to equivocate. He said, if you oppose me, try to defeat me in the next election, but I will always stand by certain values. Now, admittedly, even Helms, as stubborn as he was, did change. He started out as a critic of Israel. He ended up as a stalwart ally of Israel. I've described the shifts on both foreign aid to Africa and AIDS funding that he underwent. But in general, Jesse Helms remained the strong, principled conservative that he started out being towards the end, all the way to the end of his life.
And I think that's really saying an awful lot for him, because that's like saying he grew in the job, so to speak. I don't want to say he was on a learning curve, but it was an evolutionary type thing, and times change, and he reacted to circumstances. And I think you have to give him that. But by giving him that, I don't think you. I think you, in fact, reinforce his authenticity.
William Safire in the New York Times wrote in the late 1990s that Helms had been the most successful bipartisan chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee since Arthur Vandenberg in the 1940s. He was not the monster that was trying to destroy the State Department that everyone thought he was going to be. Madeleine Albright, who was Bill Clinton's Secretary of State, ended up being a warm friend of Jesse Helms, went down to speak at his alma mater. And if you interview her, she has many fond remembrances of how helpful he was on many issues.
Sure. Dennis, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to another caller. We've got Skip on the line. He's in Rolling, North Carolina. Skip, welcome.
From Raleigh, North Carolina.
Thank you for
taking my call. Two really quick points. I don't think that the question is so much, was Jesse Helms a bigot, as how willing was he, as compared to those other guys you were talking about, to manipulate the bigoted attitudes of others? And connected to that, I'd like to connect this to the previous segment that you had. I think Jesse Helms was responsible for accelerating, if not starting, a lot of this big sort.
Uh-huh.
I think quite a few of the problems that we have in politics nowadays can be traced right back to him and the National Congressional Club.
John Fund, the big sort that Skip is referring to is a book about how Americans are clustering into like-minded communities. Was Jesse Helms somebody who may have exacerbated that or hastened that movement?
I think lots of people can say that they contributed to that. The radicals of the 1960s, people like Helms. I have talked to liberal political consultants who unfortunately won't be publicly identified, who say they looked at Helms's mastery of new technology and his ability to use simple, vivid, dramatic language to stir up his base, and they used it as a model for things like MoveOn.org and a lot of the liberal blog sites that went after Joe Lieberman. And I can tell you, the campaign against Joe Lieberman certainly wasn't designed to unite people. It was designed to divide them.
Skip, thanks so much for your call. Thank you. And you mentioned as well, Jesse Helms sort of set the model for Democratic members of Congress to sort of second-guess the State Department, especially under the Bush administration, sending their own teams of advisors to reevaluate foreign policy decisions taken by the Bush administration, taking a page out of Jesse Helms' own playbook.
Well, look, we obviously know the Bush administration made mistakes in the run-up to the war in Iraq. Congress eventually, although with some delay, kicked in its oversight capacity and started sending an awful lot of staffers and people over there, figuring out how much money was being wasted, how much the administration was perhaps being fully revealing about the state of security there, and basically second-guessing developing a shadow Plan B-type foreign policy. Helms started that when he sent people down to investigate whether or not the Contras should get funding, which the Congress was opposing. He would also second-guess the Reagan administration often when they were supporting regimes that he didn't think deserved foreign aid. So Helms started that practice, and I can assure you, if John McCain is elected in November, I can guarantee you the liberal Democrats in Congress are going to be second-guessing a lot of the McCain foreign policy, and maybe they should. We need oversight.
In our remaining moments, let's take one more call. Dan, you're on the air. Dan is in Ela, North Carolina. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Elon, E-L-O-N.
E-L-O-N.
Yes, I grew up in North Carolina, and we are still living with the legacy of Jesse Helms, who, I would remind you, never won by a very large margin in North Carolina.
Never by more than 5 points.
Right. He was never...
Actually, I can correct that. He won his 1978 race by over 10 points.
Thanks for the correction.
Well, I think a good point to be made here is that you cannot justify Senator Helms' racism by using the racism of others.
No, but I'm simply saying when somebody dies, usually the practice is to put their life in full context. You go back to the obituaries of William Fulbright, Al Gore Sr., and Sam Ervin, who was Senator Helms' colleague in North Carolina, who was the leading strategist of the Southern Manifesto in favor of segregation. Go back and see how far down in the paragraphs you have to go to find any reference to their stand on civil rights. I challenge you to go to their obituaries and see how much of that issue it played in the context of their obituaries. That's my point.
But I would challenge you to sort of to find any other accomplishment that Helms was known for.
I just gave them at the beginning. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the most successful bipartisan chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee since the 1940s. His campaign against Zimbabwe, the genocide in Zimbabwe. You go on and on to expanding NATO, which now has over 20 countries. He was largely responsible for that. You go on to many things such as establishing standards of decency for the National Endowment for Humanities and Arts, which you may not agree with, but a lot of taxpayers felt they shouldn't fund stuff that they felt was morally offensive, like Piss Christ.
Dan, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
By the way, when Robert Byrd dies, I can guarantee you that his membership in the Ku Klux Klan and his stands on civil rights in the 1960s and 1970s will not be in the first paragraph of his obituary.
But surely they'll be mentioned. Surely they'll be mentioned, John Fund.
Tell me how, I will make you a bet that it's below the 20th paragraph.
Well, we'll have to check back when that happens. John Fund is a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He joined us today by phone from Aspen, Colorado. You can find a link to his remembrance of Senator Jesse Helms on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. John Fund, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. A pleasure.
Tomorrow, age and presidential politics. When is old too old? This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz here in Washington.